You're listening to 2A Radio with Bill Carnes.
Yeah, isn't that like a sharp pointy stick to the eye first thing in the morning? Guys, I'm your host, Bill Carnes. You're tuned in live right here to 2A Radio. Welcome to the show, everybody. Little bit of information about 2A Radio and your host, yours truly, Bill Carnes. I have been in the shooting sports since 1989, which is relatively short if you actually think about it, 21 years at this point. I got my first rifle when I was 19 years old. I was 18 years old when I got my first rifle. I still own it today, Ruger 10/22. I got my first handgun at 19 years old, and there was really no turning back after that. I took my first formal firearms training course for my 25th birthday, and I went to Gunsight in Paulden, Arizona, and I finished top of my class in the handgun 250. I was the only one to shoot a perfect score on test day. It's 5.5 days. It's Monday through Friday, full days, and then a half day Saturday. I don't know if that's still the format. That's the only class I've actually taken at Gunsight. However, I have been on the property other than that. And what a fantastic experience that was. From there, I went on to be a police officer for Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department. I've been an NRA certified instructor for a long time, which doesn't really say much. The NRA certification is more of a piece of paper, not really an ability. I moved on to be the lead rangemaster at Front Sight, where I became one of only two guys that have ever worked there as a recognized and qualified five weapons defensive rangemaster. That's where I am qualified to rangemaster the weapon systems, handgun, shotgun, rifle, submachine gun, and precision long range sniper, counter sniper type rifle from basic into and through the advanced level. So there's a little bit of qualifications and information on me. You can always find out more at BillCarnes.com, C-A-R-N-S. There is no E in the last name. So BillCarnes.com, you can find more information on me. When it comes to the show, you can always go to 2A Radio. 2A stands for Second Amendment. The official name of the show is the Second Amendment Radio Show. We just shortened that down to 2A Radio. So you can go to 2aradio.com. Plenty of stuff on there, including all of the archives. At the end of each day, the show goes up within about 30 minutes or so, including show descriptions. Every single show since its inception back of March of 2009 is up. Now, what do we discuss here on 2A Radio? Well, the foundation is all Second Amendment related. However, that's not the only thing we speak of. We also speak about First Amendment rights and basically any rights that are out there. And usually we bring them up when some government jackass or some government entity decides to want to consider or just simply does subvert some sort of right from you, me, or anybody else out there. We talk about police and more specifically police abuses from having worked in the policing industry as a patrol officer for Las Vegas Metro. I have firsthand experience in good cops and bad cops and what they do. I speak quite often about guns, gear, tactics, techniques. If you have any questions about guns, gears, tactics, techniques, rights, anything like that, you can always email me. And my email address is bill@2aradio.com. So feel free to send me any sort of comments, questions, suggestions, whatever you like. Oftentimes, say hunting season is coming for big game. You want to sight in your rifle, get some information going on about guns, gear, bullet selection, how to sight in, where to sight in, cleaning procedures, whatever that might be. Send those things in to me, bill@2aradio.com, and I will either answer you directly or, if it's good enough and I feel that the audience would probably benefit in hearing the answer, I'll hold off and I will add it right here onto the radio show. So there's a little bit of format and formula for you when it comes to 2A Radio, yours truly as the host, and really what to expect for this next hour. Stay tuned, guys. There is plenty more to come, and you are tuned in live right here with me, Bill Carnes, hosting 2A Radio.
not an option. It's a right. Cocked, locked, and ready to rock the world of the anti-gunners. You are listening to the guy who had to register his mouth as a full-auto weapon. Bill Carnes and Two-Way Radio. The fight for your rights isn't for pansies. So buckle up for the ride and knuckle down with Bill Carnes and Two-Way Radio.
Well, you may remember, everyone, last week when spent a little bit of time speaking about abuses at the Denver, Colorado Police Department. One particular cop who seemed to be abusive all the time, and none of the other cops ever did anything about it, and some other abuses by even more police going on in Denver. Of course, if one cop abuses the living hell out of the citizens, and the other cops know it but don't do anything, they're just as much at fault. It's called guilt by association, guys. It is really, it's failure to report a crime on the behalf of those cops who are not reporting on the criminal actions of their fellow officer. Now, if you do that, that is neglect of duty, malfeasance of duty, and oppression under the color of office, all of which carry heavy, heavy penalties if convicted. It's also being an associate to a crime. Have you ever heard of being charged with murder by association? Have you ever seen that? You're an accessory to a crime is what you are. So that would be accessory to battery with the deadly weapon in certain cases with this cop that we talked about last week. Well, as it turns out, a 23-year-old man has filed a lawsuit against the Denver PD that alleges he was dragged on the floor of his apartment and kneed in the head by officers responding to a, get this, noise complaint. One of the cheesiest responses that you can ever go to as a cop is a noise complaint. Someone doesn't like the sounds that you're making, or your dog barking, your stereo is too loud, or you open and close your refrigerator, or the apartment that you live in creaks, so when you walk at night because you work swing shift, and the person that lives beneath you that wakes up at 5 a.m. because they work an early day shift, they call and say that there's a noise complaint. Okay, many are legitimate. Many are not. Many are just, well, I'll show you. So, and here's the other interesting thing. Noise complaint is oftentimes the call that will go out that will be completely bogus, or almost entirely baseless. Because how can you prove that someone filed a false police report by calling in about a noise complaint? Because the noise happened at one point in time. You call. The cops come. How do they know whether or not the noise happened or not? So it's a great way to really tick off your neighbors by calling in on a noise complaint that could otherwise never be proven. So, a lawsuit filed in federal court last Tuesday alleges three officers, quote, tortured a man when they responded to his apartment in April, and that people in his home who recorded what happened on their cell phones had their devices thrashed. Lieutenant Matt Murray, a police spokesman, said officials are investigating the allegations and he could not comment. The lawsuit names Officer Abigail Dorn, a professional fitness model who was a contestant on the American Gladiator television show in 2008. The lawsuit also lists the police department and two other officers who were not named. Now, the lawsuit filed by Rohit Mukherjee, M-U-K-H-E-R-J-E. Something tells me this guy does not have European roots. It would sound as though he was probably from India. He's probably Hindu, looking at the name. And I'm just going by the way that the name is spelled. It sounds as though he is of Indian descent, from, again, Hindu descent of India. I don't want to say Indian and people are thinking Native American. That's not the case. I'd say the lawsuit filed by the victim is the latest allegation of excessive force to hit the Denver police. Denver Post reports that Mukherjee seeks a jury trial to decide monetary damages. Let's see, the local newspaper has reported that the city has paid nearly $6.2 million since 2004 to settle police lawsuits, almost all of which were about excessive force allegations. My God, really? Now, here's a question. In order to stop this sort of thing, this is what you do. You have to screen a little bit better for your new hires, and you have to retrain the people that are already on the department in order to get rid of this. And what every police administration will cry is they don't have the funding to do that. Well, if you are paying out over $1 million a year on average, you would think, and that's just to settle these lawsuits, you would think that it would cost less than $1 million to actually not have to deal with this. Or it might cost $1 million, but the money's going into positive police training, not into spending money on lawsuits. This doesn't even include all of the money that it costs to do the investigations. Doesn't include all of the money that it costs to pay the attorneys to defend. This is just in payouts. So this is what we're calling a gross sum, not the actual net sum. Okay, this is just gross on the surface. The net behind it is probably at least another couple $1 million. So don't tell me that you can't find the funds. Let's see. Mukherjee claims three officers responded to his apartment and that one male officer forced the door open when Mukherjee hesitated before going outside, which is a violation of rights. He alleged that he was forced to the ground and dragged in a wheelbarrow-like fashion. Mukherjee said in the lawsuit that Dorn stood on his ankle, that officers twisted his fingers during questioning, kneed him in the head, and smashed his face into a wall. Well, the lawsuit said that some of the nine people who were at the apartment took video and photos of what happened, but that Dorn allegedly took their devices and put them in a bowl of water in the kitchen. Okay, so you either make a bowl of water, or for some reason someone got a bowl of water, or were they bobbing for apples, and puts everybody's cell phones in there. Now, the lawsuit said Mukherjee was charged with assault on a police officer, resisting arrest, which is the go-to just chicken scratch garbage. That's the charge that the cops will go to. That's really the chicken-assed sort of charge that they'll go with, is resisting arrest. Let's see. Assault on a police officer, resisting arrest. Disturbing the peace, another chicken scratch sort of a charge. And interfering with a police officer, which is the biggest scumbag thing. Let's see. Assault on a police officer, which means they only need their testimony. Resisting arrest, which is a chicken scratch charge. Disturbing the peace, another chicken scratch charge, because the only peace that was probably disturbed was the cops, and courts have ruled over and over again that a police, on-duty police, their peace cannot be disturbed. And interfering with a police officer, which is the biggest chicken scratch charge you can put on somebody, is interfering with a police officer. But prosecutors dismissed all of the charges. Seven of the people at the apartment were also charged, but those charges were also dismissed, according to the lawsuit. Now, here's something about this arresting, and then the charges get dismissed. This is how it works. A cop decides to arrest you. They take you to jail, and they book you on those charges. Those charges, in most departments, what happens is, you'll either have someone at the jail who is part of the police department, like a sergeant or a lieutenant, or in some cases, it's even a civilian that works for the department in their legal department. They look at it and decide whether or not those charges are valid enough and submit them. Other departments, like when I worked for Las Vegas Metro, what we did was at the end of the day, you submit all that stuff. The sergeant looks at all of that stuff and they decide whether or not the arrest met the elements of the crime. If so, it goes up through the chain of command. It ends up going to the district attorney's office. The DA looks at it. They're the ones who actually have to prosecute you. To arrest, what you need is probable cause. Right? To investigate, you need reasonable suspicion. To arrest, you need probable cause. To convict, you need proof beyond a reasonable doubt. So you can see how it gets progressively more difficult. If the district attorney's office looks at it and says, we don't have enough here to prove beyond a reasonable doubt, or it's not worth our time considering the backlog of everything else, then they dismiss the charges. Now, if you arrest somebody and somebody in your department looks at it and decides it doesn't meet the elements of the crime or for whatever reason, they can do what's called an NCF, no charges filed. It doesn't even get to the district attorney's office. It never leaves the police department. But the thing is, you have still been arrested. You have still been booked. You get it? I got an email last week, something about breathalyzers. And .08 is when you can blow and end up being at the legal limit or above the legal limit, right? Well, what happens if the breathalyzers have a margin of error of 0.01 or 0.02? So you could blow 0.07 or 0.06 and still be arrested? Yeah. Car towed? Yeah. DMV take your license? Yeah. Insurance go up? Yeah. Even be charged with the crime? No. But all this inconvenience because the cop didn't like you. Stay tuned, guys. More to come after the break. RoninTactical.com has certified concealed carry training specialists that travel to you and your group of self-protection advocates. Organize a group of friends, family, or co-workers who take their responsibility of self-protection seriously, and RoninTactical.com will send out a certified training specialist who will provide a course of instruction that will get you and your group certified to carry concealed in over 30 states while providing you, the organizer, a commission for organizing the event. Do you travel for work, family, or vacation and want to remain armed and safe when traveling? Contact RoninTactical.com for details on staying home and having one of our certified professionals travel to you to provide the training and credentials for you and your group to safely and legally carry concealed in over 30 states. Call 888-416-4809 or go online to RoninTactical.com.
Tell everyone in the room to pipe down. Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
All right, guys. Even continuing with Denver PD, last month, Denver Manager of Safety Ron Perea resigned amid anger over police officers caught on video hitting a man during a violent arrest downtown last year. Perea was criticized for not firing the two officers in the case, and Denver PD recently reopened an investigation into what happened because this Ron Perea guy was trying to protect his own. This is the type of guy that's supposed to be there to investigate this misconduct and do something about it. If he sees it, saw it and decided, no, I'm going to protect my brothers in blue. Also last month, another man claimed that two cops beat him after he made comments about a traffic stop involving another person. A video was also released in that case, which is under investigation. So it's comply with us or we're going to beat you down is really what this is. And then talk about destruction of property, all right, where you end up having this Abigail Dorn taking the telephones that people have been taking video and photos of when this victim who I was just reading about ends up getting his butt whipped right in front of him. And then she takes all of their phones and dunks them into water to try to destroy any data. Didn't work, by the way, because that stuff gets saved onto these nifty little memory cards. And all you have to do is take the phone out of the water, take the memory card out of the back, plug it into a computer, and bam, all of the data is there. So this is where personal responsibility should come in there. and personal liability. You get a cop who overtly does something known to be illegal, known to stop what it is that the people are trying to record, that the cops are doing something wrong. And they go out of their way to do something illegal and in violation of their oath of office. They then become personally liable. You remember the story about a couple of cops that were in, I believe it was Texas, that were whipping on a guy who was on a motorcycle and decided to evade. They said, when we catch this guy, we're going to beat his ass, is what they said to each other. Then the guy decides to give up. He pulls over. They get out. They beat his ass anyhow. And another cop goes over and moves the dashboard-mounted camera out of the way so it doesn't catch the whipping. Remember this? We talked about this a couple weeks ago. These are the cops that remove from themselves any sort of departmental coverage. Hey, because I'm a cop and I have all this training, you can't sue me personally, all right? Because I have some sort of plausible fallback that I was acting under reasonable rules and regulations, reasonable training, reasonable suspicion. They remove all of that when they do things like this. And that's when you can start suing them personally. So, that's where you go. Someone violates your rights when they're a cop. In a lot of cases, you can sue them personally. Now imagine if all of these cops started getting sued personally and they had lawsuits against them as an individual and they had to work the majority of the rest of their life to pay off a lawsuit out of their own pocket to you. Do you think that more cops would square away their act that were already overtly out of line? Now, keep in mind, the majority of cops, and by majority I will say 51% or more of the cops that are out there on the street, are not likely to violate the rights of the average citizen by doing something like beating them into submission and beating them into compliance. Now, I also have to qualify that this way. If you have a squad of police officers assigned to a sergeant, now maybe that squad has 8 people, maybe that squad has 30 or 40 people, cops working for the sergeant. The era of that squad and the leadership of that sergeant, coupled with their lieutenant above that, usually you'll have a lieutenant who supervises 2 or 3 or 4 squads that are out. Each squad has its own sergeant, and then that sergeant has their group of officers. We're talking street cops. We're talking patrol officers. Actually, that's the way all of them work, but I'm just saying specifically for street cops is where this conversation is headed. The environment that is created around those cops with their sergeant and, in certain cases, the lieutenant as well, also out of the particular building that they work out of, that substation or precinct, depending on, you know, where you are in the country, they'd call it something different. That really depends on how things go squad-wise. It really does. I've been on squads where you have maybe 1 or 2 guys that are real jackasses, and the rest are really good because that's the way the squad is. And the sergeant is working on bouncing the other guys out of there or getting them in trouble. Now, and they're just old school or resistant or whatever. Then you get another place, and you might have 2 or 3 guys that are pretty good, and the rest, because of the environment in which it's created, they're scumbags. So you have a squad of mostly derelict cops. And all this on the same department. I went from one department, from the previous, to the latter. And I was amazed. All the same department, completely different mindsets. Stay tuned, guys. More to come after the break.
You're listening to a guy who packs a gun to shoot the bad guys and packs a mic to shoot his mouth off. Bill Carnes and 2-Way Radio are back.
You know, across America, you will have different states that are just kind of all over the map. And it happens in just about every state that has at least one very large city. What you generally have are the very large cities who are incredibly liberal, Democrat, leftist, socialist. Just the way that the people from that area who get into politics are. Okay? Then you have the rest of the state, which is rural, which is highly conservative. Stay out of my business. I don't need you. The reason is, in the big cities, you have people who are on welfare and getting food stamps and need public transportation, and they have to provide a soup kitchen and all this other stuff. Everybody that needs some sort of assistance, the politicians want to help them with getting their assistance. So they become more invasive by nature. They become more controlling by nature. They have more power and authority by nature. In the rural areas, people don't want to have to deal with that. They're more self-sufficient. They take care of their own. They're neighborly. They support the police that are around them. The police support them. And you don't have a bunch of handouts. You don't have a bunch of people who are in elected positions that want to be more invasive and more, quote-unquote, helpful with everybody around. So the rural areas tend to be highly conservative. If you look at a political map of the state of California, you will find far, far more areas, red being conservative, blue being liberal. You will find far more areas covered in red than you will in blue. The blue areas, however, are on the coast and in the major cities along the coast that have combined much more in the way of population than the rest of the state. So although by landmass area, there are far more conservatives throughout California, the population centers, San Francisco, San Jose, Los Angeles, San Diego, up and down the coast, you will find millions upon millions of people in these cities and liberals throughout. So the state is run by the liberals. You might have somebody who is a state representative out of Los Angeles that has maybe 5 or 6 square miles. Then you have somebody who is a representative out of, say, Kern County, California, that might have 500 square miles to encompass the same number of people as the 5 square miles out of LA. That's just the way it goes. Well, Pennsylvania is no exception. And there is a conservative vote that's supposed to be coming up today on the Stand Your Ground gun bill. The state house is supposed to vote on the Stand Your Ground legislation that would allow people to shoot assailants in self-defense in public places without first requiring them to try to retreat. Under the Castle Doctrine, people are permitted to defend themselves with deadly force without retreat in their homes. And this legislation, House Bill 40, would extend that to a person's porch, car, or anywhere you have a lawful right to be, according to Representative Scott Perry, Republican, out of York County. Who's the bill's sponsor? The bill has a broad bipartisan support, but it has been battled up in committee. House Majority Leader Todd Eckes, out of Luzerne County, a Democrat, last week publicly agreed to schedule the vote. He says, it's important that we are allowed to avail ourselves of our constitutional right to protect ourselves, according to Perry, the bill's sponsor. He says, right now the scales are tipped to criminals or perpetrators, and I want to see the scales tipped back to law-abiding citizens. Well, thank you. Joe Grace, executive director of Ceasefire Pennsylvania, a gun control group, described the measure as a feel-good solution. Oh, of course. He says, it perpetrates the myth that using guns more frequently makes us safer. We don't believe that to be true. Well, nobody's ever had a myth of using a gun makes us safer. Having a gun and being trained with it makes us safer. So let's get it right there, Joe. Gun control advocates are, of course, lining up amendments Some Democrats will use the bill to showcase anti-gun amendments. Of course they will. Numerous Democrats support the Castle Doctrine expansion. However, Representative Joe Pallone out of New Kensington, who has a permit to carry a firearm, said the legislation, quote, makes it clear I can protect my family, my home, or myself. That's exactly right. Pallone said he will vote for it provided it is not grossly amended. He says, as far as I'm concerned, let them offer the amendments, says Representative Daryl Metcalf out of Cranberry, Republican, a key supporter of the measure. He says, we can beat them all down when he's talking about the anti-gun amendments. Now, that is on the conservative side. Of course, now that's just for the House. The House is going to debate it. The Senate is not in session this week. It returns for session October 13, 14, 15, and then recesses for the year. So they'll have 3 days to come back and battle over anything the House is doing now. Rendell said Friday he would have to review the Castle Doctrine extension before deciding to sign or veto it. And that's whoever that is. Okay, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Now, again, that was a conservative measure to allow people to defend themselves and recognize their rights is really what it is. Recognize their rights to defend themselves rather than having a law preventing it. Okay. Now, a report naming Pennsylvania as one of the main sources of guns used in crime in other states has triggered calls for a law requiring lost or stolen handguns to be reported. This also out of Pennsylvania. Now, I'll tell you where this report comes from. The report where Pennsylvania is one of the main sources of guns used in crimes in other states is from Mayor Michael Bloomberg out of New York. Scumbag, on the take, filthy degenerate mayor of New York City. And his Mayors Against Illegal Guns, or MAG. What it is, it's Mayors Against Armed Citizens is what it is. They truly believe the only people that should have guns are cops. That's it. That's who they believe should have guns. Now, gun rights supporters, however, say the study is only aimed at masking declining violent crime rates and existing laws should be enforced. The survey by, Mayors Against Illegal Guns, an association, as they say, of more than 500 mayors, but they haven't provided an entire list that's updated. I believe it's less than that. They've had a lot of mayors defecting. Said nearly half of the guns connected to crimes in other states last year were sold in just 10 states, including Pennsylvania. The other states were Georgia, Florida, Virginia, Texas, Indiana, Ohio, North Carolina, California, or Arizona. So what Michael Bloomberg is trying to claim is that people buy guns in other states and bring them to New York to sell them to criminals. That's what he's claiming. When in fact, what you have is a gun that might have been sold 23 years ago in, say, Texas or Indiana gets handed down to someone else or sold here, sold there. It might be in its fifth or sixth owner's hands. They get transferred to a job somewhere in the state of New York and they end up living there and now they've got this gun that was originally sold in, again, Texas, Indiana, Ohio, North Carolina, wherever. That gun gets stolen or lost. Someone else gets it and then it's used in a crime. Of course, they're not giving that information because they don't have it. It's impossible to track all of that. However, let's see here. The Patriot News out of Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, says that the list includes some of the country's most populous states and is based on raw figures. The paper says Pennsylvania ranks 30th in the number of export guns per 100,000 people, which is on the bottom half. All right? But gun control advocates, of course, they want to control guns. It's not about guns. It's about control, guys. Remember that. Gun control is not about guns. It's about control. Gun control advocates say the findings highlight a need for stricter gun laws, especially a state law requiring reporting of lost or stolen handguns. Such a proposal made it to the state House floor in 2008, but was struck down. Joe Grace, the executive director, again, of Ceasefire Pennsylvania, a completely anti-gun group, says 46 municipalities in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania have reporting laws. He says states that have such laws are two-thirds less likely to have a gun exported and used in a crime. Now, where does he come up with that figure? He doesn't. All he does is say that states that have such laws, such reporting laws, are two-thirds less likely to have a gun exported and used in a crime. Now, that is completely yanked out of his backside and shown some sunshine. He throws it up in the air, and because he's the executive director of an anti-gun group, they're inclined to believe him. They created this two-thirds out of thin air, just created it. No data to back it up. Now, here's a quote from this same Joe Grace scumbag. He says, if the state general assembly will heed the call of these 46 municipalities and pass a simple lost or stolen handgun reporting requirement, I think you will see fewer crime guns being exported. It clearly would be a step in the right direction to reducing gun violence. Oh, my God. Really? Here's what this guy is trying to get across. What he's saying is, because there's no law against it in other cities of Pennsylvania. You got these 46 cities. All the other cities that are not part of these 46 that do not have these reporting laws. This is what he's saying. He's trying to draw this conclusion. That the honest, law-abiding citizens in the cities that are not part of these 46 are otherwise either going out of state and selling their guns or selling their guns to criminals without reporting it and then allowing those criminals to take them across the state line. And if they pass a state law so everybody in the state is prevented from doing that without having to report anything, then this sort of action would go down. Now, that's basically the conclusion he's drawing without saying it, is that the honest, law-abiding people of Pennsylvania are otherwise lining their pockets with dirty money by doing this on behalf of the criminals. Kind of like a straw purchase sort of a thing. Of course, that is not the deal. Criminals like laws like this. Because it makes it easier on them to not have to follow it. Do you think that the criminals actually go to the law book, keep up with the legislature, and see what laws are being passed? Do you really think that they do that? I've been doing that. I guess I better stop. No. They don't care. They don't keep up with the laws. They don't read the papers. They're not lobbying. You don't have the criminal element lobbying for something. Oh, no, we don't want that to be a law. Yeah, we do. They do want all of these anti-gun laws on the books because it makes it easier on them to operate. And the people who are in that state are now easier victims. On top of this, this lost or stolen handgun reporting requirement law is not to benefit anybody in the state of Pennsylvania. It's to try to placate and benefit those in New York City under the control of Michael Bloomberg. The entire state of Pennsylvania is looking, the liberal wing of the state of Pennsylvania is trying to bow down to a single mayor in New York City as though he's some sort of king. He is not a king. He is a peasant. He is not qualified to scrape the gum from the bottom of my shoe. An old stinky shoe at that. You know, in my day, I don't believe that Michael Bloomberg would have made it through 2 days of basic training in any military organization. If you can't make it through the first 2 days, you're a sissified little wimp. And that's all I got to say about you, Michael Bloomberg. The state of Pennsylvania is looking to pass legislation to benefit someone else's problem because of unconfirmed reports and created percentages by anti-gunners to begin with to try to get other anti-gunners on board. It is all false. It's like saying we should have an assault weapons bill at the national level to ban assault weapons and high-capacity magazines, all anti-gun terms. Please don't use them yourself. To pass that in the United States, so the war on drugs in Mexico with the Mexican drug cartels aren't so violent. Because if we didn't have those guns here as American citizens, they wouldn't have violence in Mexico? That's exactly what's happening with this Pennsylvania statute that they're trying to pass. New York City claims something. They're able to get others in Pennsylvania to back up New York City's claims. So everybody in Pennsylvania should suffer. It's not going to change anything in New York City or any other state. It's just, again, gun control is not about guns. It's about control. Same thing here. If they were to ban every gun in America, they're still going to have violence in Mexico because all the bull that they're spitting in Mexico, they have people in America buying. In fact, the people in America are the ones who are creating this hogwash, giving it to the chief Mexican Felipe Calderon, and then he's spitting it back, and then we're supposed to believe it as though he's the source. Lies. Guys, stay tuned. Plenty more to come after the break. If you live in a state which allows Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories, and you either have an interest in or already own Class 3 NFA items, the process for an individual to own these items includes photographs, fingerprints, obtaining a letter of permission from your police chief or sheriff, and a full personal background check which is spread across the whole federal system. Until now. Forming an NFA trust eliminates the requirements of letters of permission and all personal data and background checks in purchasing and possessing NFA firearms and accessories. NFA trusts offer a level of anonymity as well as flexibility in the purchasing, possessing, and storage of your Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories. To learn more about forming a secure and flexible NFA trust at a fraction of the cost from attorneys, visit www.billcarnes.com and click on the NFA tab. That's BILLCARNS.com and click on the NFA tab.
As long as politicians attack our rights, Bill will be fighting for them. Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
Back on!
All right, guys, I want to take a moment to speak on the topic of anti-gun terminology, which has crept into pro-gunners because it's been so successful of a campaign. I'll give you some examples. One is assault weapons. All right, assault weapons. They are not assault weapons. Assault weapon, by definition of Department of Defense, who created the term, is select fire or full auto, individually manned gun, not a crew-served weapon. Individual weapon. Select fire or full auto, meaning you press a trigger, you get more than one round that goes out before you release the trigger. Definition. Magazine fed gun. Okay? Now, you and I don't have those. Unless you have a class 3 and, you know, some subguns or machine guns. So, it's not an assault weapon. If you have an AR-15, Mini 14, AK-47, HK-93, HK-91, things of the like. Those are sport utility rifles. And get it right, guys. Stop saying assault weapon. I gotta tell you, I worked out at Front Sight, the largest firearms training center in the entire nation. And they have an area where you can actually store your guns, especially if you live in an anti-gun state, like, say, California, where you can store them there. They call it assault weapon storage. Placating right into there. I begged and pled with them to change that name. Nope. Fools. Fools for calling it assault weapon storage. How about this? High capacity magazine. What? Now that's supposed to mean anything that has more than 10 rounds in it. Those are standard capacity magazines. If I grab a magazine for an AR-15 that holds 30 rounds, that is not high capacity. That's standard capacity. That's what it was designed for. If it only holds 10 rounds, it is a legislatively mandated reduced capacity magazine. I would encourage you to go onto YouTube and type in Carnes, C-A-R-N-S, Champion, common spelling, C-H-A-M-P-I-O-N, and see a 7 or 8 minute video that Dave Champion and myself did dealing with these legislatively mandated reduced capacity magazines versus a standard capacity magazine, with actually walking through a multiple shooting scenario where we were shooting at targets with balloons. And all it does is show that doing things such as restricting magazine size have nothing to do with safety, but everything to do with control. Gun control? Not about guns, about control. Check that out. Send me your email. Let me know what you think. I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you in Congress, the executive, and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule.
Thanks for tuning in. Bill will be back tomorrow. Now go side in and shoot straight. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes. Learn more about Bill at BillCarnes.com. Send your comments to Bill at 2aradio.com. I will not